What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here, Monday edition of the show on Sportsnet 650. I am Jamie Dodd, broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. There is a lot to get to today. The Canucks have played a couple of games since the last edition of Canucks Talk on Friday. Some big injury-related news in a positive sense for the Canucks as well. But I just want to fill everyone in on what the show is going to sound like this week. Drancer taking a week off. Of course, he was on the road covering the team last week. He's got this week off from the show, so I'll be solo, but I'll be bringing in a rotating cast of special guests as well. Today, Randeep Janda is going to join me for the final hour of the show. Tomorrow, I believe we're going to have Landon Ferraro, and we'll kind of flip-flop between Landon and Randeep for the rest of the week. So I'll be doing some hours solo, some hours with special guests in the studio with me. And today as well at 12:30, we'll chat with Shayna Goldman of The Athletic, get her thoughts on the Canucks and everything else happening around the NHL as well. I find we're having some, we're getting a lot of texts in saying we're having some technical difficulties with the stream, so we'll try to get that sorted out ASAP for you. But anyways, that's what's going on in the show. Drance has the week off. It'll be a lot of me. I hope you enjoy that. A lot of Randeep Janda, a lot of Landon Ferraro, and some special guests mixed in there as well. All right, let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, January 13th. We'll start with the headlines. Normally, we're checking in on the most recent results, or we're teeing up tonight's game for the first headline, and we'll get to those. As I said, the Canucks have played a couple of games since we last chatted, but the headline today really is the Canucks are one step closer to being fully healthy. Philip Hronek, the team announced that he has rejoined the Canucks in Winnipeg. Final game of the road trip, of course, goes tomorrow in Winnipeg, and he was skating at practice with the team as well. So this is pretty surprising. Would have been very easy for, you know, we know Hronek went on the conditioning loan to Abbotsford. Of course, as Alan Walsh made very, very clear, he was not ever going to play games for Abbotsford. That's not a big surprise. We rarely see conditioning stints like that, but he went down there to get some practice time in. And of course, with only one game left, and then they come back, they'll play the Kings first game back on Thursday. It would have been pretty easy just to keep Philip Hronek here in the Lower Mainland. Hey, get some skates in with Abbotsford, wait until the Canucks are back in town, then you can rejoin with the team and we'll take it from there. The fact that he is going out to Winnipeg for this final stop, we don't have any confirmation. We haven't heard from Rick Tocchet, the update, anything like that. This is the first time he's skated with the team in a long time, so we'll see. But it certainly suggests there's at least a good chance that he's in the lineup against the Winnipeg Jets tomorrow. And if it's not tomorrow, well, it's got to be on the horizon. You would think. When we have more information, we'll pass it along. But surprising news to see Philip Hronek rejoining the team in Winnipeg and practicing with the team in Winnipeg. And really, really good news for the Canucks as well. Now, yes, once Hronek is back, they're still missing Dakota Joshua. We don't really have a timeline on him with his injury. But once Hronek is back in the lineup, whether it's tomorrow against the Kings, the next game, it's very, very close. And once he's back, the Canucks will have all of their best players in the lineup, all of their best players available at the same time for the first time all season. Hughes, Pettersson, Miller, Demko, Besser, Hronek, all of them have missed time for various reasons, with the exception of Quinn Hughes. He's been the one constant. Everyone else has missed time, overlapping time at various points this year. So they haven't had a single game where all six of those players have been available. That's going to change in the very, very near future. And, of course, that's had a huge impact with what this team has done on the ice and how we've thought about this team. They've had to adjust and react to so many different injuries, so many different absences. I think it's been very difficult for them to string together impressive performances. I'm not trying to make excuses. This is just what they've been dealing with. And if they do get, again, those six core guys back in the lineup, and then even beyond that, I mean, yes, Dakota Joshua is out, but they got Connor Garland. They've got Jake DeBrusk, right? They've got, you know, 7, 8, 9 of their 10 best players available in the lineup. They're going to have that very, very soon here. So the question is now, okay, will we finally start to see a higher ceiling from the Vancouver Canucks? Can their best players, once they're all on the ice together, can they collectively help this team find a higher gear to look more like contenders? Since Christmas, I think you could say, as frustrating and as up and down as the results have been, as uninspiring as the offensive performance has been, I think since Christmas, this Canucks team has played with a lot of effort. They've played well defensively as well. But we also can see how much they were struggling to generate offensively, how much they were struggling to really look dangerous. Well, now Pettersson's back. Hronek's about to come back. You have Besser. Hughes, obviously playing banged up with his hand, but still capable of performing at an extraordinarily high level. You should have the horses now, or very, very soon, to look a lot more dangerous offensively. And if you can keep that defensive effort, that defensive intensity, that work rate that we've seen since Christmas, and all of a sudden you got a little more juice in your lineup, you've got a higher level of talent, everyone's slotted in where they should be, all of a sudden, you know, Drance talks about the sleeping giant theory, right? All of a sudden, that's maybe what it looks like for the giant to start waking up a little bit. It's no guarantee, but at least they have the pieces where you can see that it might be trending in that direction, where it seems reasonable to think, okay, hey, can they start to turn this around? Can they find that next gear offensively that we've really been waiting all season for? And I think this pair of games in Carolina and Toronto over the weekend, Carolina Friday, Saturday in Toronto, they really demonstrated a lot of what I'm talking about here. And they really showed the risk and the reward of the style the Canucks have been playing, the way this Canucks team is when they don't have all of their best pieces and when they don't have all of their best pieces firing at the same time. You know, they're obviously, as we all know, playing very low event hockey. And in Toronto, we saw what that can look like when you get up early. You get that opening goal early in the game from Brock Besser, and man, that makes such a difference, especially when you're traveling on the second half of a back-to-back. You can focus on your defensive efforts, and yeah, I know they've blown leads recently, of course, but generally this has been still a defensively very solid team, especially recently. And we saw in Toronto how capable they are of stifling a team. They still have that in their bag. That's still something they can do. But in Carolina, we saw what it looks like when they aren't in that position. They fall down early, and then, or not early, but they fall down. They're chasing the game. It's very, very difficult for them to generate a push in that situation. They were still pretty good defensively against Carolina, but it was a nightmare offensive performance because they just don't have the personnel. They don't have the pieces to turn it up a notch in those circumstances. And that type of performance, you know, the low event, hey, if we get up, if we get a bounce, we can lock it down. We can win a low-scoring game. Our goaltending is really good. That type of identity, that's going to be enough to keep them in the playoff race. Probably even enough to get them into the playoffs. But we also know that it has a very low ceiling. And that's always been the question about this Canucks team this year, is we know what the floor is. And I think that take has held up, considering all of the absences and all of the problems. The floor, it's not disastrous. The floor is in the playoff mix. Now the question is, can they start to show us the ceiling? Can they start to approach a contender-level ceiling? And that really is going to start on the offensive end for this team. And there's one player who I think really sums up where this team is and the major questions about this team going into the second half now. They've played 42 games. They crossed the halfway mark in that game against Carolina. That was their 41st game of the year. So we're done more than half the season now. And Elias Pettersson still is the most important question mark on this team. And in some ways, again, I think his incredible defensive performance, and it really was a fantastic defensive performance on Saturday in Toronto, kind of sums up where this team is as a whole right now. Defense is great, but it also only gets you so far. They need Pettersson to take that engagement, that effort, that ability, the ability to read the game, the skill level, all of that that he showed in the defensive end, and they need him to start breaking games like that in the offensive end. He's capable. And I just think the fact that his skating looks a lot improved in that game, the engagement looks a lot improved, if he can apply that to his play with the puck, to his ability to produce, maybe we'll finally get to see the old Elias Pettersson back. I also think that game and that performance of his was a pretty good reminder. I get there's so much frustration with Elias Pettersson this year. Obviously, of course there is. It's been almost 12 months. It's basically been 12 months at this point since we've seen the peak version of Elias Pettersson. You're always going to have a ton of frustrated fans when that's the case. That's very, very understandable. Whatever the reason is, yes, of course people are frustrated. But I've also started to see a lot of people not just be frustrated with how he's played in the last year, but all of a sudden go back and with hindsight pretend, oh, this was always who he was. Oh, what were they thinking signing him to that contract? He's always been this player. And that's just ridiculous. That is absolutely ridiculous. If we look back at his previous like 180 games before he signed this contract, he was one of the most productive players in the league. And not only was he one of the most productive players in the league, he is also capable of turning in defensive performances like that. There's no mystery about why management was so eager to sign this player to a massive long-term deal. Why Jim Rutherford early last season came on this station and basically said, short-term, long-term, you tell us, Elias, we'll do whatever because we want you to be a Vancouver Canuck. There's a reason he was willing to do that. It's because Elias Pettersson is a player who's both capable of putting up 100-point seasons and playing Selke level at the center position. And people are going to text in, whoa, we haven't seen it. Yeah, that's true. And that's a huge, huge problem. But don't start rewriting history and saying, oh, why did they sign him? What were they thinking? He was never that player. He has been that player. And if he is again, this team has a chance to be very, very good again as well. So the question for the Canucks and the question for Elias Pettersson is simple. Okay, the defensive effort is there. That's great. The work rate, we're starting to see it. We've seen it since Christmas. Elias Pettersson, we really saw it on Saturday in Toronto. That's really important. It only takes you so far. Can the team and can Elias Pettersson find that next gear offensively? That is the question, more than anything else, that's going to determine how the rest of this Canucks season goes. We need to see, yes, elite defensive Elias Pettersson, but we need to see game-breaking offensive Elias Pettersson as well, and it's been way, way too long since we've seen that version of the player consistently for the Vancouver Canucks. But man, if he comes back, all of a sudden this season looks very, very different, especially with the Canucks basically fully healthy once Filip Hronek returns to the lineup, which could be any day now, could be even tomorrow against Winnipeg. There's some other things that I want to get into a little bit later on in the show. Rick Tocchet gave an interview to Ian McIntyre. He's basically talked to every key person in the organization over the course of this road trip. And you can go back to New Year's and that Patrick Alvin interview. But some interesting quotes from Rick Tocchet that we can get into. As I mentioned, the Canucks crossed the halfway mark after the game against Carolina. We can do a little halfway point report card exercise. Maybe we'll do that with Randeep as well, who've been the biggest surprises, biggest disappointment, unsung hero, all of that. You can always send in your thoughts, 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line as well. Moving on to the broadsheet, couple of items here. One on Hockey Night in Canada, you knew with the Canucks in Toronto that there would be some discussion of the Elias Pettersson, JT Miller, trade reports, trade speculation, all of that. And of course, Elliot Friedman delivered on that front, reporting on Hockey Night in Canada that the Canucks would be willing to trade Elias Pettersson to a Western Conference team. That Western Conference teams have reached out and the Canucks haven't shut it down. They're not closing off that conference. We see that a lot, usually more with the division than just the conference, but sometimes even with the conference. You'll hear, yeah, hey, we're going to trade this star, but we really want him to go to the other conference. We don't want to have to deal with him in ours. Apparently, the Canucks not taking that tack. And I just got to say, file this as another entry in the we're really serious about this file. Starting to have the feel of a parent saying, I'll turn this car around. I will absolutely turn this car around if the children keep misbehaving in the back, even though they have no intention of turning the car around. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's just the read I get. Just throw another one, another log on the, I swear we're serious about this. We want to do it file. Fire, I should say. again, I could be wrong, but man, there's a lot of talk about how serious they are about doing it, and you never really hear that another team is serious about stepping up and doing it, serious about stepping up and matching their price. So that's the latest. I just wanted to pass it along on Elias Pettersson and JT Miller from Elliott Friedman. Also in the broadsheet today, Rick Dhaliwal on Donnie and Dolly, talking about a pending unrestricted free agent Kevin Lankinen, who, of course, since January 1st, has been eligible for a new deal from the Canucks. Lankinen gets his fourth shutout of the season on Saturday against the Maple Leafs. And Rick Dhaliwal reporting that the Canucks want to do a deal with Lankinen sooner than later. However, Lankinen's team taking more of a slow, cautious approach to getting a deal done. So the Canucks seem to be, per Dhaliwal's reporting, they would very much like to bring Kevin Lankinen back to their crease, to their goaltending situation for next season, which is a pretty significant report. We've talked a lot about, you know, traditionally Jim Rutherford doesn't like to spend on backup goalies. They try to do it cheap. Even we've seen in his time in Vancouver, you know, Colin Delia, Spencer Martin, the plan this year maybe to come in with Artur Shelov as the backup until they get Lankinen in training camp. So I wonder how much that speaks to their plans for Thatcher Demko long-term, their confidence in Thatcher Demko to stay fully healthy, to kind of shoulder a high starter's workload. I think it also just probably speaks to how impressed they've been with Kevin Lankinen. It's kind of a cliche at this point, but man, Lankinen has been incredibly important to the Canucks. He's been low maintenance. He's been super reliable, very steady, given them some huge performances that they've needed to keep their season afloat, to stay in the playoff mix, to stay basically right at that playoff bar in the Western Conference. You can understand why the Canucks would be eager to get a deal done. You can also understand why Kevin Lankinen would say, well, hold on a second. I've got four shutouts. I've played a lot of games. Yeah, this year I had to wait until training camp to get a deal done. This year you were offering me a PTO at first, and I had to bargain up to a guaranteed contract. That's not going to be the case for Kevin Lankinen after this season. He'll be in demand. Salary cap's going up. There'll be a team willing to take a bet on him. So the question becomes, how much are the Canucks willing to go? How high are the Canucks willing to go? How uncomfortable are they willing to get? Not just to get a deal done, but to try to get it done soon. Again, this is January now. This is the time of the year where the Canucks tend to get pretty serious to get a lot of business done, whether it's signing their own UFAs, shopping on the trade market, all of those things. If they're prioritizing Kevin Lankinen, you know they'd love to have that taken care of so then they can focus on other things. So then they can focus on Besser. They can focus on trying to acquire defensemen. They can focus on whether they actually want to trade one of their two top six centers in Elias Pettersson and JT Miller. Typically, once the Canucks identify, we want this guy, they're willing to go make the deal done. But not always. Nikita Zadorov walked, obviously. Elias Lindholm walked. So that's something to monitor here with Kevin Lankinen and Rick Dhaliwal reporting the Canucks want to do it sooner than later. Lankinen's team taking more of a slow wait-and-see approach to the negotiations. Lineup notes. As I mentioned, the Canucks announced that Filip Hronek has rejoined the team in Winnipeg. Could he play tomorrow? Skating with the team, practicing with the team today in Winnipeg before they take on the Jets tomorrow. And obviously, you get a player of Hronek's caliber back. That's a big deal for your team. I am curious to see what the immediate impact is. One, how long does he need to kind of ramp up and be the best version of himself or something close to the best version of himself? But of course, in his time in Vancouver, he's almost always been paired with Quinn Hughes. And I thought early in Filip Hronek's absence, you could tell that Hughes was maybe missing his partner a little bit. I've been a little skeptical of the idea that, you know, Quinn Hughes needs Filip Hronek to hit that Norris caliber tier that we've seen him hit over the last couple of years. But I thought early in Filip Hronek's absence, you started to see the case for that. It didn't look quite as dominant from Quinn Hughes. Now, the last little while, and certainly Saturday against the Leafs, Hughes has been phenomenal. He's been absolutely excellent. So right now, maybe he just needed some time to adjust to playing without Filip Hronek. But right now, Quinn Hughes doesn't look like he needs Hronek back by his side. Yeah, it would always help, but he's already playing an extraordinarily high level. I think where you will see the big impact of having Hronek back when he eventually gets back is, one, you know, Tyler Myers is not on the top pair. Everyone's minutes can go down a little bit. Don't forget, Hronek kills penalties as well, so that's some extra minutes he can soak up. He's on the second power play unit. All of a sudden, all of the other defensemen in the lineup get to play a more appropriate role, get a little bit of a decrease in their minutes. That should help them be more effective. The other big place is overtime. I've played a lot of overtime this year, and yeah, Quinn Hughes, as Rick Tocchet said, can't be out there the whole time. He can be out there for a lot of it, but not all 5 minutes. And so that's meant Vincent Desharnais has been out there, Tyler Myers, Carson Soucy. It doesn't look great in 3-on-3 overtime. Who knows? If they have Hronek for all of these games, maybe they pick up an extra point or two there. Maybe their record looks a little bit different. That's a place where he will help right away as well once he's back in the lineup. And I'm curious to see. Okay, Quinn Hughes is playing at a very, very high level. The non-Hughes minutes are still a major question mark for the Canucks. Do we finally see an extended stretch of, you know, Carson Soucy and Philip Hronek, or Derek Forbort and Philip Hronek, something like that, where you try to spread the puck moving out a little bit throughout the defense core rather than loading it all up on a top pair? I understand the allure of the Hughes-Hronek pair. They've been phenomenal at their best. But given the concerns, given the struggles to move the puck elsewhere, could this finally be the time where we see them deployed on separate pairs, at least for a stretch? Other lineup notes. Eric Brandstrom clears waivers. Phew! Our nightmare avoided. Everyone's nightmare. Oh, the Eric Brandstrom discourse. Record highs. I will say, look, I think there was very much an argument to get Eric Brandstrom back in the lineup over the likes of Guillaume Brisebois, etc. The Brandstrom discourse was starting to remind me a little bit of like the Nikolai Goldobin discourse, where there's just so much talk over fundamentally a marginal NHL player. And I say that again as somebody who would have a ton of time for getting him back in the lineup over some of the people the Canucks are playing. But let's keep it in perspective here, people. Let's keep it in perspective. We're talking about a guy who just cleared waivers, and not because of his salary or his contract or anything like that, because teams weren't that interested. So I get it. You have your favorites. Should he be in over Brisebois? Yeah, sure. I've got a lot of time for that. But again, let's keep it in perspective when we're talking about Eric Brandstrom. Anyways, he clears waivers. He's going down to Abbotsford to join the Abbey Canucks. Quick playoff and standings update right now. Canucks actually outside the playoff picture in the Western Conference, really by the thinnest of margins right now by points percentage. Yes, they have more points than the Calgary Flames, 48 points in 42 games. Calgary has 47 and 41. So Calgary has a 573 points percentage to a 571 for the Canucks. So it's basically a dead heat, basically a tie for that final wild card spot for the Vancouver Canucks. The good news is, if you're following along with Dom's model up at the Athletic, back to an 82% chance to make the playoffs, even with that split against Carolina and Toronto. And I think the thing that you're really seeing here is Utah scuffling. They're 2-6-2 in their last 10. You know, even St. Louis, yeah, they've got a bit of a bump with Jim Montgomery. They're 5-4-1 in their last 10. You know, Calgary 5-3-2. All of those teams. I mean, Seattle has really fallen out of the playoff mix entirely. That chasing pack, which is really Calgary, St. Louis, Utah, continues to be uninspiring. And as long as that's the case, and the Canucks continue to play at this high floor, yeah, they should have a very, very good chance to make the playoffs. As I said earlier, if their best players start to be consistently dangerous offensively, start to be consistent game breakers offensively, with the exception of Quinn Hughes, of course, who's been doing that all season, then yes, they should easily make the playoffs in the Western Conference. The question is, how much more than that can they do? Can they be legitimate contenders still this season? We'll skip the betting odds today. We'll get an update and a look at the Winnipeg game tomorrow on the whiteboard. That is the whiteboard for today. We'll take a break. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Shayna Goldman from The Athletic joins me next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.